Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
We got a full house today.
We most certainly do. So I guess we better get started. This is going to be a fantastic segment. First up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, we have with us from CBRE, Senior Vice President with Asset Services, Jeff Kappen. And we have with us from Shorenstein Properties, Bank of America Plaza, Mr. Dyron Densmore. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Now, Dyron, we're here to talk about Bank of America Plaza. Can you share a little bit about what's going on over there?
Well, over the last, say, 3 years since 13, we've done a lot of investment in capital improvements. And along with that, a big part of those capital improvements have been a part of the our green sustainability efforts.
Mm-hmm. And you recently were awarded some water conservation?
Yeah, we did a water improvement restroom renovation where we changed out all the porcelain fixtures and the valves and saved over 5 million gallons of water year over year.
Wow.
Substantial.
So now, how did that come about?
Well, just from the standpoint of our goal is to be at Bank of America Plaza with Shorenstein is to, you know, for the building to be green, sustainable. That's not only a property goal, but also a national goal for Shorenstein. Mm-hmm. So that was the impetus to set a lot of the improvements we put in motion.
Now, when you decide to make sustainability a priority, how do you kind of prioritize what where you get the biggest bang for your buck?
Good question. It's really payback. I mean, in a lot of ways, as far as from the standpoint of the investment, for example, the water improvement, we put in a little over $250,000 and the payback was 14 months. So, wow. I mean, our savings within 1 year was over $250,000. So 14 months payback. And then from the standpoint of our energy management system, which was probably the largest project we've done, which was an investment over $1 million, the payback has been probably three and a half, 4 years. So we prioritize in a lot of ways from the standpoint of payback, but yet at the same time benefiting the tenants and the property.
Now, are you getting the tenants, is this something they're looking for when they're deciding amongst properties?
Yes. It's a competitive edge, if you will. That's not the driving force for for Shorenstein. But yeah, I mean, in the marketplace, as Jeff can probably attest to, all of those out there, big corporations, small operators, they're looking to be in properties that are cutting edge environmentally and green.
So, Jeff, you're going out to the marketplace. You're wearing this loud and proud, right? You're saying this is a sustainable green property. Speak to that a little bit and how it impacts your conversation with prospective tenants.
It's a great transition into what we have going on from a leasing standpoint. There's a huge pursuit of talent in the market today with companies. They're all going after the same talent, a lot of which lives in Midtown. And we have to have authentic, creative and sustainable environments, because in a lot of ways, a company these days is more focused on putting their employees in an environment that's going to keep them longer than they are how much they're going to pay them. So this really takes effect when we bring a tenant in the building. They need to know that this iconic tower that's been in our skyline for years and years and years is also very authentic and in today's standards.
Now, are you doing anything as kind of the tenant for the tenants in terms of addressing how many co-working spaces and how many kind of entrepreneurial endeavors are happening in Midtown?
Absolutely. We've got a really exciting program going on that we call the Block at B of A. Again, we've got some of the most prominent companies in this building in the city with Troutman and Sanders and Bank of America, Hunt and Williams. But this is an environment that we think will be relevant to some of our technology companies and our advertising and media companies that are really focused in Midtown these days because of the talent. So we are, as of this weekend, started construction on an entire floor of what we call our loft spec suites. These are suites that we build without having a tenant, that are very high-end, open-air, lofty suites that these technology companies who are you know, busting out of Georgia Tech's incubator programs and some of the other incubator programs around the city. And they, it's sort of their second stop in the lifespan of their business. And what we found, I'm in charge of leasing at Atlantic Station as well. And we did this 5 years ago at Atlantic Station, and it really transformed the property from the standpoint of the company demographics. It went from a project that had financial service companies and law firms to really one of the most bustling technology locations in the city. And that's what we're trying to do at Bank of America in the block at B of A.
So now, aren't there different kind of suite of amenities you need to offer to attract those kind of people to your building?
What's important to these companies is the space itself. They want a space that they feel like is very industrial, very open and lofty, with creative finishes. The challenge with these companies is they're, in a lot of ways, they're young companies and they don't have the capital to go through a full construction process. They don't know who they're going to be from one day to the next from the standpoint of their growth. So the key is that they can move into a space that their employees feel has some culture and some creativity to it, but they don't have to make a long-term commitment and go through what can sometimes be a very cumbersome process, construction process.
So Dyron, you found Jeff, Jeff found you. How do you guys work together and how did it all get started?
Well, I think when Shorenstein took over us back in January of this year, CBRE was chosen by Shorenstein as our leasing agent. We as the owner, manager. So we came together as a team that we worked together in leasing up the building.
And now you play beach volleyball, everything, right? Just arm in arm everywhere.
That's right.
Well, so what is the key to working together effectively? Because, I mean, you guys probably see a lot of each other, don't you?
Yeah, communication. I think just staying in touch with each other. And when we're all on the same, if you will, sheet of paper as far as our objectives and our goals, as far as when we have tenants come in, we all need to know that we're putting our best foot forward. At least from a leasing perspective and from a management perspective.
that's a nice way of saying I make the promises and he tries to fulfill them.
Yeah, that's good.
Can you share a little bit about how these kind of tech suites kind of evolved? Because you saw that in the marketplace, there was more and more co-working spaces. You have a building that has space, so it makes sense to kind of play in that area as well. But how did those conversations take place and how did you decide how much space you're going to offer to this kind of, these tenants and how to make the most of this to make it work?
That's a great question. One of the reasons Shorenstein decided on CBRE and our team is we've had some success with this at other properties, as I mentioned before. And we just know with the location of Bank of America Plaza, we're sitting in a hotbed of talent. So that's really the first point is the talent is there. Now we have to have space within the building that's relevant to these companies. And so we wanted to start with an entire floor, which is what we're building, and have multiple size suites so that we can attract multiple size tenants. And what we found is when you start at that scale, we'll have two or three or four new tech companies come in the building. And it's a herd mentality. They want to be near their peers. So what we envision happening is building this initial floor, which is under construction today, will attract three or four tech companies, advertising companies, media companies, and that will lead to a significant amount of future leasing.
But are you going after the startup as well, or these are more established companies in that space?
We're going after both. And what we've found is established companies and young companies are all looking for the same kind of space. And we use technology companies and media companies. We use that sort of loosely because really what we're finding in the market in Atlanta is all companies want to have really cool, creative, collaborative space. And so we use the word technology a lot, but we're really chasing everybody. You're going to find companies like Home Depot and GE and NCR who want this kind of space, but you're also going to find companies who are spawning out of Georgia Tech's incubator programs that are looking for this kind of space.
Well, later on, we're going to be talking to Kevin Bray of Deputy, and we'll get his opinion because he's probably right in your sweet spot, right?
Absolutely. I brought a lease with me if you want to.
So, how does the whole sales and marketing thing work? Does your phone, do your phones ring a lot, or you're out shaking the bushes, or how do you let these folks, how do you have these conversations with the people that are going to sign lease agreements?
Who's asking, my client or you? No, the phones don't ring off the hook. We're out shaking as many branches as we can. In our business, there are a lot of real estate brokers in Atlanta, as we know. And so a lot of our work is to make sure that those brokers are communicating to their clients what's going on. But a lot of it's getting out to the incubator programs and getting out to, Technology Association of Georgia to make sure that these companies know that they have this opportunity at Bank of America.
Now, Darren, how are you you're going to the market in terms of leading in this area? I know you have this whole sustainability, but how do you go out in the sales and marketing to help?
Well, a big part of that is probably being a part of the local industry as far as from the standpoint of BOMA, Building Owners and Managers Association, or your CCIM is a commercial investment group. Midtown Alliance is a big, we're a part of the Midtown as far as all of their efforts. So the Midtown Alliance has always been a very user-friendly organization for all the properties and the businesses to be a part of. So we want to be out there on panel discussions, this type of a situation where we're able to talk a little bit about what we're doing at B of A, Bank of America Plaza. So through those venues and those entities, we're able to tell Shorenstein's story as well as Bank of America Plaza.
Now, are you seeing that there's still that kind of growth in the Midtown area? How are we in the life cycle of that?
I think we're right in the middle of that life cycle. What's interesting in Atlanta is we haven't had a lot of new construction, but we've had a lot of growth with business, and we're a very business-friendly environment in Atlanta. So there's a significant amount of activity in the market right now from all different kinds of companies. I think we have a long runway left, and we're hoping there's going to be some really interesting and exciting announcements here shortly.
In the Midtown area or downtown, you have the Beltline area and perimeter. I mean, is all of those things just gangbusters right now?
Gangbusters, I'm not sure how to define that, but it's all very relevant to the tenants in the market. What we're seeing across the market wide, and I'm responsible for multiple properties in almost every one of those locations you mentioned, is this attraction of cool creative space. And so with that comes the amenity base.
So that's not a fad. That's a trend that's happening, and that's kind of a must-have nowadays.
It really is. And when you add amenities like a Beltline or like Ponce City Market nearby, Georgia Tech really in and of itself has become an amenity to these companies because the talent is right there.
That makes sense.
Those are the things that sort of are the icing on the cake.
This idea of broker mindshare, I want to dive into that a little bit because I would think that really is critical, but that's not a one and done thing. That's a consistent effort to stay top of mind, with folks who have the boots on the ground, right?
It is. It really is. That's what we do, to be honest with you. We're out on the streets meeting with those brokers to make sure they know what's going on because the market changes very fast. Our market in Atlanta has changed faster than any time in my career in the last 2 or 3 years. So we're constantly on the streets making sure that these brokers know what's going on, and especially in this effort, because there is not much like what we're doing at Bank of America with these loft spec suites available in the market. Nobody's doing it like we're doing it. And these are going to be suites that really are market changers, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and a big part of also I may add too, as far as getting out in front of all of those clients, is social media. We're connected with Facebook, Twitter, our building website. So we have those vehicles too to reach out through.
And that's becoming more and more part of your marketing mix, right? You have to play in social media. You have to be active and give people a reason to connect and engage with you.
You do. You have to be connected with the people in the local market. And, so we put a lot of effort towards that because the days of the phone ringing, as you mentioned before, are over.
That's good. But you have to be easy to work with. You have to make those commitments that you described earlier in the conversation. You have to keep those commitments. So There's no sales tool like doing good work, is there, Lee?
Right. But, and also, it's hard to kind of surprise and delight your customer, and it seems like you're trying to do things like that and be ahead of them.
Well, that's true. And a big part of the, when you have either, you know, there's two things, you know, that are most important. I mean, keeping our tenants that we have. That's right. The lifeblood of the building.
Exactly.
And then bringing in, you know, new tenants. And a big part of that, too, as far as what Jeff is spoke to as far as amenities, that's critical. I mean, we have a cafe, we have coffee bar, we have a lot of the amenities on site. So you're not looking to have to go walk two or three blocks,
right?
An elevator ride down to the main lobby.
And this goes back to who owns the building, and it's something we shouldn't just gloss over. Shorenstein bought this building in January of this year, essentially out of foreclosure, and the building had some struggles in previous years with the foreclosure on Bentley Forbes. So this is a group who came in and bought the building all cash and is very well capitalized and very well respected across the country. And they're allowing us to do things that are going to keep this building relevant into the future. One of the things Diane mentioned is a coffee bar. It's not just a coffee bar, it's a Starbucks. I'm not sure there's a better name out there that just opened in the lobby of the building recently. We hired a design firm that we're in the midst of designing an entire new amenity wing in our west wing. So there are really some exciting things going on in the building.
So now, if people wanted to learn more about each of you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
The first thing I would tell them is go to BOAPlazaAtlanta.com, BOAPlazaAtlanta.com, and you can get a lot of information on the building. Or they can call me directly at 404-504-7900.
Likewise with the website, or my email is ddensmore@shorenstein.com. And my cell number is 404-606-3220.
Uh-oh. Cell number.
I know. Hey,
look, he's serious about customer service.
Yeah,
I'll
no
tell you
kidding.
That.
You just set yourself apart from so many
that's
others.
That's what it's about.
No, some
maybe a big
stuff.
Mistake, but.
No, this is exciting. Some great stuff happening at Bank of America Plaza. Keep up the good work, and maybe we'll have you come back periodically and get us updated, because I'm anxious. I think it might be fun. When you get this space, when you get some tenants in that space, I think it might be fun to talk with them and kind of get a 360 view of their experience, both in working with you guys, but also in being tenants. At
absolutely.
Yeah.
We'd love to do that.
Yeah. Fantastic. Hey, can you hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Absolutely.
Sure.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us Director of Customer Success with Deputy Mr. Kevin Bray.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. What did you learn in that last segment?
I learned a lot. I learned that we might be talking more about moving office locations.
Ryan, well, I need one of those referral agreements over here.
So, Kevin, sure. What are you guys doing over at Deputy?
So, we are a workforce management and employee scheduling solution. Mm-hmm. We were founded in Australia, headquartered in Atlanta, Georgia, and just working to help companies figure out ways to better manage their employees and staff as far as scheduling goes.
So now, how did the company come about?
So it came about from our co-founders. One of them owned is a ground handling business. He's in the airline industry, basically. A lot of compliance, a lot of regulations, and he was killing himself trying to make sure he managed those people and get the schedules of the right people at the right place at the right time. So he found our other co-founder to develop some software to come in and help him manage that solution. He's able to grow his business, and they sold that business off and kept the rights to Deputy and found a Deputy from there.
And then this is a software as a service?
Yep, software as a service.
And then what part of the company buys this? Is it HR?
We see operations. HR. Sometimes IT gets involved because it's going to be on their mobile devices and, you know, using their computers and that type of thing.
And then what are they using now?
Our number one competitor is Excel. People still doing
Excel spreadsheets?
Still doing it manually.
Wow.
Obviously, there's a lot of other players in the space.
So that's always good when your competitor is Excel?
I'm very excited when I talk to a customer or hear from a customer that says, yeah, we're still doing it manually. It's a fun conversation because we can change the way they do things really well.
So I'm getting the distinct impression that without you personally, the whole opera falls apart, but I'm not entirely clear on exactly why. What exactly is your role over there?
Yeah, so it's the full life cycle of the customer from when they come and hit our website for the first time, how they experience it, how they get into a trial with our software, what it's like while they're in the trial, making sure they understand how it works, training them, all that fun stuff. And then once they become a customer, making sure they're taken care of after the fact and ongoing customer service and that type of thing.
So are you going to market with the, it seems in Atlanta, this kind of common marketing automation where you have SDR or sales development reps and then they're passing them on?
Mm-hmm.
So is that happening in Deputy as well?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're, when they pass it on, they go to you?
Yep. So our team just makes sure that it really is simple. Our trial model is built for someone to go to our website and self-serve.
Uh-huh.
But when they do have questions, we're here to make sure that they have those answers. If they want to see more, or just better understand how the software can impact their business, we'll get on and show them a demo or, you know, help them walk through it. Then after they convert to a paid customer, then it's making sure that they're happy ongoing.
So you're coming to play when they're a paid customer?
Yeah.
And then when they're a paid customer, what is the... Like, how do you surprise and delight your customers?
We are constantly updating the product. That's the biggest thing if you're a product company, is to making sure that the product stays up to date, stays compliant with lots of laws, all that type of stuff. And so we actually have a feature in our software where they can request features or suggest features they want to see added. Those are reviewed. The ones that are the highest rated generally get implemented in the product on a pretty regular basis. So we are constantly updating the product.
So serving customers after their customers,
mm-hmm.
It seems like you have to kind of strike a balance between being there when they need you, but not, you know, being a pest. Can you speak to that? Because you're reaching out to these folks and communicating with them on a fairly regular basis. Can you talk about your approach to that?
We are, but honestly, we make ourselves available for when the customer wants to talk to us. So we have 24/7 support, right. And a lot of that happens over chat. And so oftentimes when someone's in the midst of working, they don't have time to stop and ask a question or figure out what's going on. It's usually after hours or when they're not on the clock. And so that could be any time of the day. And we have customers all over the world. So we have to be ready to be able to help them whenever they have those questions. So really, we just make ourselves available for them to come to us when they have those questions.
Now, could you share a time when some of your feature improvements have been driven by your customers and that's really impacted the business?
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll get into this in a little bit, but there's a new overtime law that's coming out. And so we have a setting in our software where you can basically build an employee profile so that if someone goes over a certain amount of hours in a week, they get paid an extra amount of rate, you know, extra rate, 1.5 times or whatever that is. So building those types of things to help them stay compliant with laws of the various states is one thing. Or it just may be as simple as having a really elegant mobile app that they can use on their iPhone or Android device so that it's much easier for them to use the service and not have to stop what they're doing and go find a computer.
So what's your backstory? You always been doing this kind of work?
I have been in sales for a very long time. And coming over to Deputy, I started in November of last year. But just been in the Atlanta area for a long time, all in technology, all in the tech space.
Now, what is it like for you from going from one technology company to the other? Because it seems like from a structural standpoint, they're kind of similar in that they have similar ways of doing it. It's just a different product or service they're selling.
Yeah, it is. Sales is sales. But, you know, when you get into these different companies, there's a different product. The whole purpose of coming to Deputy was, A, you know, I had some people that I knew that were working for the company. But, B, I've always worked with large enterprise, you know, 40, 50,000 employees. So coming mm-hmm. to a smaller company was just a completely different experience. It's a whole different workload, different roles and responsibilities, and just a fun thing to go do.
So from a culture standpoint, you're enjoying this more?
Absolutely.
All right. So you sufficiently scared me on this overtime wall thing.
Wait till our last guest comes in. That's all he's going to talk about.
Well, we may engage him. Keep us out of hot water. But as a small business owner, Lee and I, as small business owners, what are some things we should be doing or not doing so that we do keep our fat out of the fire?
You're going to ask the sales guy, not the lawyer?
Well, not only that, I'm going to ask on the air, which is probably the first thing the lawyer's going to tell you. Whatever you do, don't ask for legal counsel on the air from non-legal people. But anyway, let's get your perspective.
Well, let's make sure real quick that we know the law. So starting on December 1st, and there's some caveats to that, but any employee, full-time salaried employee making more than less than $47,476 a year, random number, I know, if they work more than 40 hours in a week, they're going to start getting paid overtime.
So that'll be Ryan's answer. Just start paying everybody over 50K and you don't have to worry about it, Stone.
employers have a couple options. They can start paying their people more, or they can start managing their hours. And that's really, you know, that's their two options. So you're going to maybe see some of that, so they don't have to deal with it.
And that's it. It's not up for debate. That's just the way it's going to be going forward. You got to pay them.
I think it's going to be the standard eventually. Right now, there's a lawsuit back in Congress. A bunch of states are fighting the bill and wanting to delay it. And so it might not take effect December 1st, but I think the general thought is it's eventually going to take effect, and businesses need to start getting prepared for that.
And whatever's taking effect, you don't want to capture it on a spreadsheet.
Exactly. And oftentimes we find businesses will wait until the law's in effect and then figure out what the solution is. And you can do that if you want to, but our encouragement would be to go ahead and figure out what you're going to do and be ready for whenever the law goes into effect.
So now, but what are some of the things they can do to, what can a business do?
Yeah, so workforce management is huge. So there's a lot of things, a lot of advantages with a workforce management solution. You can obviously manage hours and make sure that you're able to keep your employees under whatever that threshold of hours that they need to work. It also helps you remain compliant with any laws that may come down the road. We're starting to see other laws in cities where, hourly workers for certain industries have to be given 2 weeks advance notice for their schedules. So just lots of different laws that are going to be coming to build on and help the average worker. So just knowing what's going on, being compliant, and then really protecting yourself down the road in case an employee ever
comes back. And
that's
where a deputy comes in, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And don't use phrases like off the clock.
There's no off the clock anymore.
Attorney shaking his head.
So, yeah, deputy, we offer this exact solution so we can help the employers
stay compliant.
Yeah, with
now,
the laws.
What's the pain the company's having? How do they know, other than they're using Excel, that deputies at least start exploring deputy?
Yeah, generally the pain is a lot of different things. Communication with their employees, letting them know when schedules are going to be published. Maybe employees have to drive to a location to pick up a schedule. We can eliminate a lot of that. Keeping track of it, what happens when somebody calls out sick or can't show up for some various reason, helping them make those changes and swap out and get the right person there. So there's a lot of things that a workforce management solution like Deputy can help automate and make their life a lot easier.
And so if they're having any of the pain, they just have to go to the website. And then they can start playing around for free, right?
They can go to the website. We have a free trial, 30 days, play around with it. It's fully functional. And oftentimes we find that they're pretty excited what they see, and we'll convert at the end of that time.
And then when they do play, if they have a question, you're pretty responsive.
Yep, we are there. We have 24/7 chat, 24/7 phone, 24/7 email. And anytime they have a question, we're going to have somebody there to answer it for them.
I like the idea of the chat thing. I've seen this a little bit more and more on some of the services that we invest in around here. But if you're going to do that, you need to be prepared to respond.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely. Right? Yeah. So we have a full team that's working around the clock. And again, we're in 73 countries around the world. So we care about the states, but it's not just the states. So
right. It
truly is 24/7 support. And we find that a lot of business owners don't want to call somebody. They would rather just be on the computer working. But,
and then just ask the question, keep working, get the answer. Now, what percentage of your customer service happens via chat versus email or phone?
It is a majority of it, simply because email takes longer, even though we're there to respond. Chat is instant. Mm-hmm. Email, you're sending it, you're waiting for somebody to respond to it and that type of. So it's that instant communication without having to be on the phone.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking you've got to build in, there's going to be a big body of knowledge that you can train someone or some someones to respond to. But then there's going to be a couple of things, that only Joe can really handle this question. Right. So you've got to have that locked and loaded too.
Yeah, we do have that from time to time. I mean, we have, level one or tier one support, if you will. And then if there's a problem or something that the tier one can't handle, we can escalate it to others inside the business that can help resolve that. So we have a plan for that as well. But for the most part, our software really is intuitive. It really is easy to use. So most of the questions are just kind of aesthetics and how to get it set up properly. And then we can move on from there.
So with the global reach you guys have got and the growth you're experiencing, are you recruiting? Are you looking for more people, at least in some markets?
We are recruiting. We're looking for we have a couple of marketing positions on our website right now. We may have some more sales positions down the road. So we are growing, and absolutely.
So what's the culture like? Is it a fun place to work?
It is a fun place to work. You know, it's funny as we talk about this whole compliance, we still have the rule inside of our culture that the only clock we watch is our customers. And so we have a lot of fun while we're in the office. We work hard and we, you know, I know it's cliche, but we try to have some fun and play hard while we're at it as well.
Good stuff. So if somebody want to learn more, website for you guys?
Yep, deputy.com. And they can find everything they need there. You can get a hold of me. I'm here in Atlanta, obviously. Kbray, K-B-R-A-Y, at deputy.com.
Or hit the chat button.
Or hit the chat button.
Test him 3 a.m. See.
Well, no, this is very important stuff, and I'm glad you guys are on the job for it. And it sounds like you not only have created a good product, but you have made a genuine investment in supporting that product, and that's encouraging.
Absolutely.
Keep up the good work, man.
Thank you very much.
Can you hang with us? We got one more guest.
I would love to.
All right, Lee, you ready for the headliner?
Yep.
All right. He's been very patient.
It's so funny how the show just kind of filled itself like this.
Yeah, no kidding. You would think that we had some kind of strategic direction.
Right, I wish.
Believe me, we don't.
That's hilarious.
This guy started in the cheap seats, right? He moved his way up to sit at the table, and now his mic is on. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast attorney Brian Stillwagon. How are you, man?
Doing well. Thanks so much, guys. Thanks for having me. I was going to give your producer props for putting this together like this, props are necessary.
Serendipity is our producer.
Well done.
All right. So you got to get in there closer. You're with Sherman Howard and your labor and employment partner there.
How about
coincidentally.
That?
You also have some opinions about this new Department of Labor overtime rules. Don't you?
I do. Well, let me help tie together all three segments. I started out my career in the Bank of America Plaza.
There you go.
My first law firm. It's a fantastic property. I would love to have had some of those amenities when I was there. It's a fantastic property. So, yes, now I am a management side labor and employment attorney. It just means that I help employers get out of problems with their employees and help to avoid some of those problems. And one of those big problems is wage an hour. And the regulations that you were talking about with Kevin are coming down the pike, and if employers are not ready, they're going to be costly.
Now, this is, we're talking about this thing that's going into effect December 1st, and isn't Georgia trying to stop this from happening? Is there some kind of lawsuits or something?
That's right. Georgia's one of about 21 states that filed an action a couple weeks ago in the Eastern District of Texas to try to stop this, along with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. They're arguing that the Department of Labor doesn't have the authority to implement this sort of regulation, and we can talk about some of the specifics later. I don't think it's got a good chance of succeeding. The Department of Labor has obviously regulated a lot of wages for several decades,
right,
and chances are that's going to continue. That's not going to change anytime soon. So to err on the side of caution, if you own a business, prepare by December 1st. If it turns out that the lawsuit's successful and we get to undo some of this, fantastic, but plan for the December 1st implementation.
So now, what happens if they don't comply with the rules? What are the penalties?
Yeah, if they don't comply, well, first let's talk about what the law is really quick, and then we can talk about what will change, if that's okay. So so we heard from Kevin that that obviously employers have to pay overtime to your employees who are making who are working over 40 hours in a week. But clearly, you have some employees who a lot of people call salaried who don't get overtime. I know I don't get overtime. I'm sure a lot of these guys don't get overtime.
I know a lawyer that can help you with that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Me too. 1st. Exactly, exactly. So what? So to be someone who can't get overtime, you have to perform certain duties. You can't just call someone salaried and they don't get overtime. But that's something that a lot of business owners don't understand. Salaried and hourly, those are payroll terms. Those are terms that, you know, Kevin and his team are very familiar with. And the term that we need to think about is non-exempt and exempt. And what this December 1st deadline is it's looking at who can be exempt, who can not have to receive overtime. And that's what's changing. The duties aren't going to change, but the salary threshold is. Since 2004, that salary threshold has been $455 a week. That's the first step. If you don't make over $455 a week, you have to receive overtime if you work over 40 hours. That's a pretty low amount here in 2016.
Yeah,
that number is going up to $913. So that's on an annual basis over $47,000 a year. If you don't make over $47,000 a year, no chance that you can not receive overtime. That's what's changing December 1st. So if you're currently making between $23,000 and $47,000 a year, and you're currently salaried or not getting overtime, you're exempt. your life is going to change come December 1st. And Kevin mentioned, you know, you might get a raise. You might just get bumped up to over 47 grand, but business owners only have a limited pot of money to work with. So if your salary goes up, chances are they're going to reduce your hours to where you're not going to be working over those 40 hours. And that's where a company like Kevin's Deputy really comes into play, because you're going to have to manage your workforce and you're going to have to track your hours. To get back to the question you actually asked, which is what happens if you don't, the liability is tremendous. And again, this is something that business owners do not understand. If you get caught either by the Department of Labor, who comes in and does an audit, or they decide to file their own lawsuit, or a vigorous plaintiff's attorney, who for the past decade have been finding these sort of violations with Fortune 50 companies down to mom and pop shops, they're going to go after not only the money that you should have paid those employees, they get it for the past 2 to 3 years. So you go back 2 or 3 years, everything you should have paid them. You automatically double it for liquidated damages. That's the penalty provision. So you double it. But if you recover a dime for that employee, you get all of your attorney's fees if you're that plaintiff's attorney. So let's say you bring it for one employee and that employee should have made $1,000 in overtime this year. You go back 3 years, $3,000. Double it, $6,000. Let's say it took that attorney 50 grand, 100 grand to actually bring that lawsuit. You're paying 100 plus whatever the actual damages are. So this can sink a small business. It is in the headlines weekly about your Fortune 500 companies getting hit for this. So this is not a small problem.
So what are some other mistakes that small business owners make when it comes to labor and employment law?
Sure. Well, I think one of the biggest mistakes is they just use common sense. That's an absolute mistake. It's like trying to do your taxes using common sense. That's and this ridiculous. Thing is like a tax code. It's very regulation based. You would think that if you call someone salaried and it's a manager and they have agreed to work however many number of hours that it takes, and you're going to pay them $40,000 a year, give them some responsibility, that you can do that, that if the employee agrees to that, then you can do that. But that's not the case. You have to meet very specific duties to be able to do that. Something else that people take advantage of is calling someone a contractor, right? If you call them an independent contractor, you don't have to pay them overtime, right? You don't have to pay taxes. You don't have to pay a variety of things. You can't just call someone a contractor and all of a sudden it magically converts them from an employee into a contractor. And that's something that these sophisticated employers are getting hit with lawsuits regularly on doing that. Something else that they do is they really take advantage of off-the-clock work. I mean, if someone should have clocked out at 5 but really needs to stay late and focus on a project, and, well, good for that employee. You know, she's really taking the initiative. She's doing what needs to be done. If you know that she's working off the clock, you may not have told her to work off the clock. If you know she's working off the clock, your company is benefiting from it, and so you're liable for making her work because you're getting the benefit of that. So that's a big problem area.
So it doesn't matter if the company and the employee are in full agreement on the working relationship. The government has kind of their own rules that everybody has to follow, regardless if the employee and the company are in agreement.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. This is one of the areas of law that you cannot contract around. You can't say, you know, here's your employment agreement. You agree that you're only going to make this for however many hours that you work. Unfortunately, this is one area that you cannot contract around.
And so is one of the major safeguards, I don't know, like some sort of policy book? Because it's one thing if you have that conversation with two people who own the firm, but then maybe they have a handful of mid-level managers that don't know this or understand it or execute on it. Is there some wisdom in having, look, this is how we go about recruiting, developing, managing employees?
Yes, that is absolutely right. It's not the people at the top who are likely going to be making these mistakes. It's your low-level managers.
Right.
They're your front line into avoiding this type of lawsuit. They're the ones that have to be trained. You've got to go in there and train them and say, listen, we've got these new people. They are going to have to start tracking their hours. Previously, before this December 1st deadline, they may have been people who could come and go as they please and never have to clock hours. Now they're going to have to start using something like Kevin's software to track their hours. And so you've got to make sure that people are clocking in when they walk in the door, they're clocking out when they go out on lunch, they're clocking back in, and that they're clocking out at the end of the day. And that when they stop working, they actually leave the premises and stop working. Like I said, if you get the benefit of their off-the-clock work, you're going to be just as liable. And so it's absolutely a matter of training that front line to know what to look for, to make sure that they're not encouraging their team to work off the force, off the clock.
Now, at Sherman and Howard, what size companies are your sweet spot?
Sure. So we're a mid-sized firm. We've got about 200 attorneys. We work with everything from Fortune 50 companies down to anyone. I would say if you've got over 15 to 50 employees, you're going to start becoming subject to most of the federal laws. So we would start to work with you. We've got a very flexible fee arrangement based on the size of the company and the work that we need to do. We're not going to be the cheapest in town. We don't advertise ourselves to be such. We have high.
So some firms advertise as the cheapest in town.
I wouldn't say they advertise as the cheapest, but their rates and their work product reflect that. So this is an area where you're gonna get what you pay for, and just take a look at some of the headlines, and you can see what some of these companies are paying for as a result of poor advice.
So so you must be a fan of Kevin's product.
I'm a fan of any product that makes it easy for my clients to track their thousands of employees and stay out of trouble. And for anything, for anyone who has the number of employees where it's going to become a headache to start to administer this stuff, I would hate to receive an Excel spreadsheet right at the outside of litigation and say, this is how we've been tracking our hours.
So Kevin, I want to bring you back in this. Now, are employment attorneys one of your channels?
They're about to be.
No, are they? I was wondering.
No, I mean, we've certainly talked to some attorneys, but we'll be talking after the show for sure today, because I think we see this a lot, but oftentimes the attorneys are not the ones that are contacting us. They might be telling their clients to, hey, you want to take a look, but don't generally get many calls from attorneys.
Right. But Brian, this is something, his product is something that can keep your clients out of trouble, right?
Correct. Correct. If we have clients who we found out were not properly tracking their employees, we would want to point
and you
them.
Want an easy solution for that. You don't That's want them exactly to get, create right. a lot of That's administrative exactly headaches. Right.
We need something easy. We need something that's cost-effective for them to implement. And I think anyone who looks at the cost of a product like that and compares it to a single piece of litigation,
right,
it's a drop in the bucket.
Right,
it's not a question.
So if you get that letter from the Department of Labor, obviously they should reach out, call your firm, and have a conversation. But we shouldn't wait till we get that letter.
That's exactly right.
There are some things we should do now, and one is be aware of what's happening out there and start following those rules, but don't just follow them. Document the fact that you're following them. Is that accurate?
That's right. That's right. You've got less than 2 months before the deadline. And so it's not the time to panic, but you've got to act now, because that deadline is not moving. I would be shocked if it did with the current administration and the way that things are going. Plan on that December 1st deadline. Get prepared. Look at your workforce right now. Look at those employees who are making between $23,000 and $47,000 a year, and see who is potentially going to be affected by this new regulation. Then you see whether you need to move some people around. You need to move them back down to hourly, non-exempt, whether you need to give some people raises, whether you need to reduce hours, or you might just need to hire more employees. When you have more employees, your existing employees don't have to work as much overtime. Look at those things between now and then. Work with your attorneys, either in-house or outside counsel, to do that analysis so that your full analysis is privileged, so that when you get sued, you don't have to turn over your whole stack of paper that says, look, right, we knew
do
what we were doing.
Do this proactively.
That's absolutely right. Do it proactively. The cost of hiring an attorney to prevent a problem like this is substantially cheaper than trying to handle a single case after the fact.
So if somebody wanted to learn more, website for you guys?
Absolutely. Go to sah.com or shermanandhoward.com. My direct line is 404-567-4372. We're in the lovely Invesco building in Midtown Atlanta.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Thanks for having me, guys.
This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.